Good evening. K2 Romeo India Whiskey is here with K2 KEY, probably, and at this time we're going to begin the TechNet. Person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. Do we have any check-ins tonight? Please give me your call letters and name at this time.
WS2N, Paul.
Oh, with a yes, Dick. Glad to hear that, Paul. You probably have a space report, too. I just heard that the shuttle got canceled until January. Must be quite a story behind that one. Anyone else checking? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
Say good evening. This is K2KEY. Anybody out there that would like to follow along, we'll do a little bit of a tutelage on use of the Smith chart that we carried over from a question last week. So if you'd like to follow along, get the Smith chart out, compass, straight edge, and a pencil, and we'll do a little bit of some interesting application of the Smith chart. So, back to you, Dick.
Well done, Mel. I completely forgot about the fact you and I made a solemn promise that we're going to solve the Smith chart problem. I forgot it. Oh, well. Alrighty. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? We got Paul and Mel. Give me your call letters and name right now.
KC2MDT. Steve, no questions, Dick.
Okay, Steve. Anyone else? My goodness, is there a major football game or something tonight? One last call. Anyone out there to give us a call letters and name to sign into the TechNet? Please do so right now.
Says that. Whiskey Alpha 2, Sierra, Sierra, Sierra. Howie, no question.
Very fine, Howie. Howie with a no, Steve with a no, Paul with a yes, Mel with a whole lot of stuff to talk about. One last call. Anyone else? Give me a call letters and name right now. Okay, Paul, looks like you're it. You know what you do in high school, Paul, when they tell you you've got to write two pages. You use wide margins and double-spaced, big lettering. You've got to go nice and slow, Paul. Ask us a very elaborate question. You're the only guy. WS2N, K2IW in the TechNet.
Okay, very good, Dick. And, you know, since the season to be jolly, I guess, you know, maybe people are out at the stores, who knows where else, maybe, Dick, that time of year. But, I don't know. I know the Jets just lost. What else could be on 50 minutes? I came on late. You got me, Dick. The question I had deals with, not really ham radio, it's electronics in nature. I just had a part replaced on my car, a sensor. Thinking about sensors, the shuttle is being delayed from a common problem. The engine cutoff sensors, by the way, Dick. I think we went over that some time ago. It creeped up again. Well, this sensor in my car, it's a speed sensor. This is tied into the computer of the car, and it actually makes the speedometer move and does some other things. Makes the car run terrible and makes all kinds of lights come on the dashboard. One of the many limit type of switches and things that go wrong that lights up your dashboard. So the guy I deal with, he gave me the part back. He gave me a diagram that, when was it? They spent quite a bit of time diagnosing, trying to find out where this electronic component is that's creating this blinking light problem on your dashboard. But this guy's pretty good. He finally got it, and I took it home and took it apart. I wanted to see if it was actually how it works. And apparently it's got this coil. And it's got a spinning magnet inside. I had asked him, is this one of these optical things? He goes, no, it's a spinning deal. It's you'll see when you take it apart. So I sure enough, it's a small spinning magnet, maybe 3/4 of an inch, not even in diameter. And it spins in this with this coil. It's just very odd to me how the thing operates. You know, I put a multimeter onto it, check the ohm readings, and even try to get some kind of voltage reading by spinning this magnet. Now, I don't know if the coil failed yet or not. I have to look into it. But my real question is this magnet. It's magnetic all the way around. I guess I would call it a toroid. And at the same token, you take another magnet that has a north pole and a south pole, and no matter which way I put this, I can't get a south pole out of this magnet that spins. No matter where you put this opposite magnet, trying to get a repelling effect, everything pulls. Instead of a dipole, it's almost like a monopole, and I know it's just impossible in the magnetic world. I wonder if you have a few words on it, if you've been familiar with this type of thing, or trying to figure out, is this thing setting up a voltage inside of a coil, or is there another voltage being introduced? There are three wires. One is definitely ground, black, gave me a schematic, and the other two are come from computer parts. So I'm thinking maybe one is a coil, and then this magnet somehow is interfering with the existing magnetic field that might be there. Not sure exactly how it works, Dick. This coil type of thing half surrounds it. It doesn't go completely all the way around it like a motor would do. Just curious if you've come across this type of thing, Dick. WS2N, back to that.
It's that common, a WD2H, WD2 generator.
Okay, how we recognize. Give us a couple more words here, Paul. Does this thing plug into the transmission or the differential? In other words, is there a part of the car that rotates at the rate that the wheels are rotating, where this thing has a mechanical pickup from? Is there something like a speedometer cable between it and the transmission? That's question number one. And question number two, you're going to have to give us a little bit more description of the magnet, its shape, the coil, its shape, the relationship between the two, what turns against where, what, the fact that you've taken it apart. Apparently your repair person at your garage knows is enough of a scientist, and you're going to take it apart, figure out how it works, and you want to know what's going on. I've often said that inside of every ham radio operator there's a scientist trying to get out. So first tell us what's the prime mover, and then give us a little more description of both the magnet and the coil. This would be a great case where if we had television, ham television, you could send us pictures of it in color. But now, your words are going to have to paint a picture. So give us enough words to paint the picture, Paul. WS2M, K2RIW.
Yeah, Dick, I should get a digital camera. That's a good idea. Hook it up to a computer and then email it. Email these types of things. That would be good. I kind of thought that. I said, this really isn't a good question for just the audio world, It's the picture is worth a thousand words, I guess. And it bumps to the transmission itself to the top of it, the top of it bumps toward the back of it a little bit, but there are three different speed sensors that are attached to your transmission at different locations, and this is one of them. Unfortunately, it's the more expensive of the three, but that's the way it is. And I think you said you had a Honda, so this comes out of a Honda, by the way, Dick. Does have some kind of mechanical. It's not a gear type thing. I had left without asking him. I think it might be just a force-fed pin, a heavy duty pin, maybe 1/4 of an inch in diameter, probably pushing against this thing, this spinning magnet on top of the magnet. you have a spring which lets this thing rotate. The whole spring rotates with this magnet. The top of the spring has a round piece of steel on it, which sits in the body of this little gadget. Now, this thing, this whole setup is small. It's only maybe 2 inches by 2 inches by an inch deep. And I'm just curious about the physics behind it. Unfortunately, the coil, that's why I figured I'll ask Bert on that. It's encased in this sealed black polyethylene type of material. So, you know, the only way I'm taking that apart is to take a Dremel tool and just start cutting away. Doing that, I'll probably damage the wires that are inside of it. So, but, you know, I will do that eventually. I think I'll ask to maybe somebody new. So the spinning magnet really bothers me that, you know, no matter where I go, it's got one feel to it. I thought maybe if I moved around the magnet, with a screwdriver or something, I would get, like, you know, a magnetic area and then a blank area, magnetic area, and then it might work like a generator or something in the feel of a coil, you know? But it wasn't that case. It was magnetic equally all the way around. The top plate, let's say it was a plate, the top looking down, the bottom, the sides, it's all being, everything, you know, you take a nail or something, it's going to be pulling toward it. And that's fine and dandy, but if I took another magnet that has a north side and a south side, I would have thought that somewhere along that magnet I would have gotten an opposite pole but if you take the north or the south, and no matter where you put it, it's being pulled to this magnet. I thought that was kind of strange, but not really too familiar with the toroid idea of a magnet. I've read a lot about it. It's kind of weird that it's all encapsulated. Can't get out from its shell. It's probably what it is, I think. But it's a permanent magnet, and the permanent magnet is within this feel of a coil there.
Okay. You did tell me about a spring return. In order to use Lenz's law, and I'll explain what that is in a minute, in order to get a voltage out of a coil by way of a magnet, you have to be making some kind of a change of the amount of magnetic field that cuts through the coil. And there's lots of different ways of doing it. So, first of all, it's connected to the transmission. The transmission rotates, and you have to pick out some kind of information about the rotation of the transmission. So now this, they call it mechanical pickup of this 2 inch by 2 inch by 1 inch box, rectangular box, bolts down to the transmission. I'm guessing some kind of a rod goes from the box into the transmission. Now one of two things is happening as to how that transmission is conveying mechanical energy. Either the rod coming out of the transmission is being rotated by the transmission, that's mode number one, or mode number two, the rod coming out of the transmission is pressing up against a cam, and the spring-loaded cam is creating push rod action. In other words, the rod coming out of the transmission is being pushed up and down by something inside the transmission, like a cam. So first of all, do you believe it's truly rotation, in which case the rod coming out of the transmission would have some kind of a key weight to it? It would be square to make sure it doesn't slip. Or if it's really a round rod, then it could be pushed up and down by the cam inside the transmission. So question number one, what do you believe is the mode of the mechanical energy being coupled out of the transmission into your sensor? Back to you, Paul.
Okay, yeah, I asked Greg about this. I thought, because I was pushing it with my as a set in the shop with him, I thought maybe it was a setup too, where by pushing it up and down, that's not the effect. That spring just supplies pressure, so this magnet could almost like float, you know, as it's spinning. It's definitely a spinning. It's definitely spinning. Type of motion is this rod that it intersects with into the that connects with the transmission, the spinning type thing. Maybe. Oh, it's small. It's got to be an eighth inch in diameter. Probably an eighth inch in diameter rod that's probably pushing up against the this one piece, and then through, you know, through this piece that it's hitting, you know, that part, that shaft, little shaft that it's hitting is connected to the magnet, and therefore it spins the magnet. Above that whole setup, pushing down on this whole setup, to balance it out, is this spring, very small, pretty sturdy spring, but I think eventually that's what wore out to the, I don't think the spring had enough push to push down anymore, and this thing wasn't spinning anymore. I think that's probably, you know, what eventually made this thing fail. By the way, this took this guy many, many hours of diagnosing the problem. He had a time with it, especially being in an older car. If you have anything in the 1990 era, oh man, this guy had his hands full going back into the old archives trying to figure out how to back you there.
Okay, now the rod that comes out of the transmission, does the transmission supply a rod, or does the sensor supply a rod that goes into the transmission? If the sensor supplies a rod that goes into the transmission, does that rod have a keyway? What stops that rod from slipping? The spring that you described, is the spring pushing in an axial manner or in a radial manner? In other words, the spring is trying to push the rod coming out of the sensor further into the transmission. But if there's some kind of a keyway on that rod, otherwise the rod would just simply slip. So that's question number one. Now, Paul, go ahead.
It's a hollow piece of metal that's attached to the magnet. Yeah, it's too hard to explain. But that's just a spinning rod. This other piece it must have been a force fit type of thing. It's got to be force fit. I didn't see the opposite side. When I came in, he had the new one installed, and I can't see what's pushing up against it. There's no keyway to grab onto it, no gear mechanism. It's almost like a force fit type of setup, I would think, just looking at it. And that's what makes this thing spin. I think if it was a hard connection, it might be, might break something too quickly. They probably want it almost like a clutch type of setup. Every time it starts up real quick or stops. I think if it was a hard connection, it would break something. Similar to the reason that you would use clutches or pulleys on things. So it's axial. The spring is axial. You know, if you had a record, 78 record, and you had a spring sitting on top of that record pushing down, it's that type of deal. And then the rod would be pushing up at the bottom of the record, axial. So the opposing spring is pushing down, and then this rod pushes up, and it balances itself out, keeps the spring where it's supposed to, you know, be, and then the coil is this black polyethylene coil. I'm going to have to cut it apart, I can tell. And then it's half surrounds this magnet, so I'll have to see what's in there. It's old technology, but they're probably still using them today in cars, and it's nice to know about it. So I'm gonna have to cut that whole thing apart. Come back maybe next week, and let you know what I find in there, how many coils, or whatever. That might be helpful.
Okay, now the rod that comes out of the sensor, how far does it stick out of the sensor? An inch, a half inch? You said it is hollow. Are you saying the rod that comes out of the sensor is a piece of tubing, thin wall tubing? Does something go up the center of that piece of tubing? Or is the magnet on the outside of that piece of tubing, or is that piece of tubing that comes out of the sensor, and when you go inside the sensor, is that the magnet? Is there a ball bearing, or a thrust bearing, or a sintered iron bearing in there? And the spring, I think you're saying, is it's an axial spring pushing down. Is there some kind of a plate between the end of the rod where the magnet is and the spring, so the spring is able to slide? And I think I've got a guess as to how the magnet works. I'll get to that in a minute. But first, give us some more description about that. The rod coming out of the sensor, how long, how much diameter, is it hollow, is there something going up the center of it, when it's attached to the transmission. Back to you, Paul.
Okay, first of all, I don't see, there's no bearings involved. It's just, and it's packed with axle grease is really what it looks like. You know, like a Ken doll axle grease, heavyweight. And it was packed with that. I had to clear that all out, see what I was looking at once I unscrewed this thing. Now, you take the cover off, three screws, and you look into it, and you see, the first thing you'll see is the spring, you know, wants to pop out, because you took the cover off. The cover is pushing down on top of the spring. The spring, top of the spring has a ball, like metal onto it. I would call it a ball bearing, you might want to call it, attached to the top of the spring, so that this thing could turn smoothly against the cap that you just removed, followed by this spring. The spring is maybe 1/8 inch in diameter, probably smaller, and then that pushes down slides over the tubing and pushes down onto the magnet. Well, I'll have to look at that. Or was it just pushing on the tubing? No, it had to be just pushing on the tubing. Followed by the magnet. Magnet's got a hole in it, so that goes around this tubing, we'll call it, a shaft. And then the bottom of the shaft. And this all takes place within, you know, an inch and a half, what I'm telling you. So the bottom of the shaft goes through the body of the case, and then the body of the case, if you're looking at that from the outside, you'll see this tubing, this axial tubing that spins, and you can push that up and out with your finger, push it in and out against the opposing spring, or you can turn it with your fingers, and you can turn the magnet inside, and you know that if there's enough force pushing down, there's a shaft coming up from this transmission, that must be something there that naturally I didn't see it. It was covered when I was there. That thing would turn this axial tubing, which turns the magnet, and it's that type of an arrangement thing. That's about the best I could explain. And of course, this coil is inside this box that surrounds this magnet. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, and the coil doesn't completely surround the magnet. It's only on two or three sides, so to speak, not at all. Two or three quadrants. When you look down on the magnet and coil in an axial manner, the coil doesn't go all the way around. Alrighty. You may not have recognized, Paul, the fact that there is two or three different ways you can magnetize a piece of steel. A conventional magnet, you magnetize it from end to end. In other words, one end, I'm going to assume that your magnet is round. One end could be north and one end could be south. That's one way of magnetizing it. Another way of magnetizing it is you look at it end view, and 12 o'clock is north and 6 o'clock is south. It can be magnetized across the short dimension of the magnet. And if it was magnetized that way, when you brought either end near a ordinary magnet, you wouldn't feel the repulsion. But if you put it sideways against an ordinary magnet, the North Pole and the South Pole, and you rotated it, you would feel more attraction in one rotation, and 60, 180 degrees away of rotation, you would feel the repulsion. You may not have realized that a magnet can be magnetized across the radial dimension, not the axial dimension. I wonder if you considered that, Paul. WS2N, K2RIW.
I really haven't thought about it. I just figured there must have been one long magnet, and they probably sliced it up into a million pieces and put they must have had one long tube, and they magnetized the whole tube, and they probably sliced this up into a million pieces and put one in each speed center for all the millions of stars that they have. That's what I'm thinking. So I'm thinking one side is north, and the top axle part would be north, and then the bottom would be south. But I don't know. I don't get a repulsion with my other magnet. I know it has a north and south to it. I'm going to come near it with a compass. See what happens with that. I didn't try that yet, Dick. That's my next thing. But I've checked on the internet how these things work. I can't find it, and not the way to go with dial-up, by the way. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, I wonder if you understood what I mean now by axial magnetization rather than radial rather than axial, I'm trying to say. In other words, assume that my magnet is a 1-inch long rod, an eighth of an inch in diameter. And yes, I could magnetize it from end to end along the 1-inch dimension. That's a typical way to magnetize it. There's nothing stopping me from magnetizing it across the short dimension, so that if I looked at it end view, I'm looking at it end view and I see a small round object. And of that round object, the top of it, of the round picture, I call it 12 o'clock, and the bottom I call it 6 o'clock. You can magnetize a rod between 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock across the radial dimension. The only way you'd be able to tell if that's what's going on is to hold the flat side of this rod magnet near your testing magnet, near the north pole of your testing magnet, and rotate it in your fingers around its axis. Rotate it so that either the 6 o'clock position is closest to your magnet or the 12 o'clock position is closest to your magnet. Then you'd be able to sense if it's magnetized in a radial manner instead of an axial manner. Did that make sense, Paul? WS2N, K2RIW, the check now.
Yeah, okay. I thought I mentioned that in the beginning. I tried to determine. I was hoping that I would get some kind of a difference by rotating the little magnet, and by holding a magnet near it. I'm hoping that it's going to pull on one side and it's going to repel on the other as I rotate it. As I spin it. No difference. That's what was bothering me. I couldn't get a difference that way or axial, above or below. I thought that was kind of strange. I said, what kind of freaking magnet is this? I was hoping for some kind of difference. I'm just starting to think, how could you have a magnet with monopoles don't exist. I've read enough fine books to know that. I mean, in theory, I heard they do, but in the magnet world, it's supposed to be a dipole. That's it.
K2KEY, KW, with a comment?
Yeah, K2KEY. Go ahead, Paul. I mean, Mel.
I don't know if you've ever seen the, now you don't see them anymore, but some years ago, especially on the commercial machines I used to work on, some of the commercial videotape equipment that we used, they had a capstan motor in there that seems to be very similar to what Paul is describing. The magnet in there was a flat magnet, made out of some kind of material, and you couldn't find anything like a north and south or anything on it. It was a type of material, but if you dropped this magnet, if you dropped it on the floor, it shattered to a million pieces. It was glued to this metal plate. Then there was a spring, and then a printed circuit board with a series of coils. And the system was actually held, in other words, was pulled together to the case. The magnet was pulling it into the case. so that there was nothing, in other words, no clips, no nothing was holding it into the case except the magnetic pull of it to the case with the printed circuit board with the coils in between and a shaft going up the middle, of course, that kept it centered. And that was the basis of the capstan motor used in a number of the recorders that were used, the commercial recorders that go over.
Okay. I think I see what you're talking about, which nowadays is called a brushless DC motor, external race type. Outrunner, they call it. Outrunner versus an inrunner. When you go to the modern-day electronic motor, electric motor, radio control, model aircraft, boy, they've got some very fancy motors these days. Very high torque, very compact, very high power output. I saw a 3-kilowatt motor, which is 4 horsepower, running a helicopter, and that motor was about 1 3/4 inches diameter, about 3 inches long. A motor 1 3/4 inches in diameter, maybe 2 inches at max, and 3 inches long, producing 4 horsepower continuously. Boy, they've come a long way with these super magnets and so on. Now, another thing that can confuse you, Paul, is that let's assume now that your rod magnet that's connected to the shaft, and you haven't told us how it's connected. In other words, the shaft that comes out of the transmission, which is hollow, is it constant in diameter as it goes through the thrust bearing of the, as it goes through the simple bearing or whatever it is inside of this greased up case, and then does it become wider or narrower and then attached to the magnet, or is the magnet the exact same diameter as the rod? Haven't made that clear. Also, when you try to test a radial magnet as opposed to an axial magnet, you got to be very careful. If the magnet you're using to test it is super strong, it will dominate, and as such, you'll always get attraction, no matter what you do. You have to hold it a certain distance away from your magnet. I'm assuming your magnet is one of these flat things that you may have gotten out of a disk drive. Super strong magnets, they are. And they're magnetized across the short dimension, by the way, those ceramic magnets. So you have to hold it a certain distance, otherwise that magnet you're testing will dominate and you'll always get attraction. So try rotating it between 6 o'clock and 12 o'clock by rotating around the axis of your circular magnet, your tubular magnet, I'm going to call it, while the tubular magnet is held as if you're going to put it flat against your testing magnet. But you're not going to put it flat because you're going to create a significant distance so that the magnetic field from your testing magnet does not dominate. There's got to be a certain distance there for that to work. Have you tried any experiments like that, Paul? So describe the magnet, how does it attach to the rod, and have you tested at a distance? WS2N, K2RIW.
No, but I will definitely use your inverse square law. See how it works. Dick, and also I'll try it with the compass. I got a good compass here. I was just looking at the compass. I said, you know, I should have tried it with that. And, yeah, Mel says what he was talking about sounds like something similar, but I don't know. It sounds like the magnets are glued together on the thing. This looks like one solid piece of metal. But it might be a little different there, Mel. Sound like it was like same idea with the spring and all. But no, this is definitely one solid piece. They were only talking about a spring, a magnet, a case, and a coil, and Honda sells this piece for $175. I mean, it's really bizarre. I mean, I think it's some kind of exotic magnet. We'll do further testing with it, and I'll let you know what happens next week. But I tell you the truth, I'm not going to bring that magnet up here. I'm not going to put that magnet anywhere near any of my electronics in this ham shack. That's going to stay down in my workroom. Very good, Dick. We'll give it a shot. I'm hoping for some kind of a difference. But whether there is, and I'm sure there's got to be a difference somewhere. You just can't have... say you have... a magnet stick that's warm, you know, and you bend it and you somehow weld it together. You know, I don't think that's possible. If it heats up and it gets rid of the magnet system, but now you would have no north and no south. It would just go around and around forever, right? You know, like a toroid. By the way, what kind of magnet that I tested with? You know what? This comes out of an alarm system. The alarm systems that attach to windows. You know, the little magnetic pickup. One of those was shot one time. It just broke apart. I've got a couple of those magnets. I think Mel's familiar with all those alarm magnets too. And that's all it is. It's just a rod, you know, with a north and south on it. It is pretty powerful, so probably overwhelming the little magnet thing. So we'll give it a shot. Thank you.
Paul, how many wires comes out of this sensor system? Question number one. Also, describe to us the coil. I think you said the coil does not wrap completely around the magnet, only wraps around it on the three quadrants. What shape is the coil? What you think is a coil, what shape does it have? And how much around the perimeter of this rod magnet does it wrap? Back to you, Paul. A number of wires coming out of the sensor first.
Okay, you got three wires coming out. And one wire, black, definitely goes ground. The guy gave me a schematic on it. The other two wires, one feeds the input of the transmission computer. This car has a transmission computer, and it also has a regular engine computer. So the one wire goes there, and then there's another wire that goes to the engine computer. So you've got to, you know, if you follow the lead, they would both be in a positive world, you know, your B plus world, and the ground is the only thing going to negative, you know, if you follow the schematic around. So these are two input type of things going in, and I guess using the black as the ground. I did an ohm test between the ground and one of them. I got like 2 point some odd ohms, probably a coil, and the other one, I'm not getting any connection whatsoever. Open, it's an open circuit between the both. So my guess is either the magnet spring failed or the coil itself might have failed, and that's why I'm not getting any voltage or any reading on the ohm meter. Then again, that might not be true. If I spin this magnet, does that one that has no effect, you know, does that come back to life? You know, I don't know. We'll have to see, Dick. I think I covered everything. Yes, the magnet was very strong that I was using, so I'll have to back off. Back to you, Dick.
WB2HWW, a comment, please.
Yeah, hold on a minute, Howie. I got another set of questions I want to ask him, and that is, you didn't describe the coil to me yet. Also, there's a slim possibility that the open-circuited wire really is capacitively coupled, and you'd be able to tell that by going under your highest ohm scale, your 20 megohm scale, and reverse the leads back and forth and see if you get a slight kick. Have you tried that, Paul? Go ahead. And describe the magnet to us. Describe the coil to us.
Yeah, I didn't get that part. Yeah, I did get you get a quick reading, and then it goes back to zero. So, yeah, it must be charging a capacitor somehow. Either a capacitor in there, or you tell me that you know that stuff. And the coil itself, yeah, if you look down on this, you're looking down at your record player, your record, and if you take a coil and you put it, not quite 180 degrees all the way around, probably, you know, maybe 150 degrees. That's the distance that this black thing covers. Not quite 180, that's for sure. Maybe even 120. I'll have to look again, but somewhere in that neighborhood there.
Okay. When you got the kick on your ohm meter, were you on the high ohm scale, the 20 megohm scale, and you got the kick, and then it went to open circuit? or were you on the low ohm scale on the one that makes contact, and you saw it tick and then come back to zero ohm? Which scale were you on? Which wire were you on? Which direction did you get the kick? Back to you, Paul.
Digital meter I used, I just had it on, probably off. Maybe the meg ohm setting, I think it was the higher one. And then, I would see it react with ground and with the center coil, the three pins. So, I would see it react with ground, and I would also see it react with the other one, and then settle down real quick. Pretty quick, fast enough where I can't really see the reading. Something's happening. I thought maybe it was just a reaction of touching any kind of metal. I touched the other contact to another piece of metal, the ground or something else, but there's no reading. So there is some kind of reaction going on, Dick.
Yes, but when it ticked and finished ticking, did it end up at infinity or end up at 2 ohms?
Oh, I got it. Yeah, no, infinity, open circuit.
So the lead that was open circuit is the one that would give you a kick. The lead that was 2 ohms would always measure 2 ohms. Was there any kick to the 2 ohm side?
No, that must be a coil. No, that was no kick whatsoever. No change. Just the other one.
Okay, I'm going to guess that your rod of a magnet, which you haven't described to us what diameter it is compared to the rod. In fact, tell us that one. The rod comes through the case. It must be going through some kind of a sintered iron bearing or a ball bearing. And then as the rod goes inside the case where the grease was, does it get wider where the magnet is, or is the rod itself, the hollow rod, is that the magnet? Back to you, Paul.
The hollow rod or tube doesn't look like it's changing in taper whatsoever. And the this magnet, sit around it. I'll have to go look. It's separate from this tube shaft that's been. I don't know if there's a seat in there. I forgot, Dick. I'll have to open it again. I forgot how to. I didn't know that. If I thought that was relevant, I would have really put that in my head. I think it was just a seat in there. Grabbing it. Or was it the spring? Did the spring be acting as a shaft? I don't know. I'll have to look, Dick. I can't remember. I don't want to say anything. I'll probably check. Maybe I'll go down and get a screwdriver and take this freaking thing apart.
Can you slide the rod out of the case when you've got it apart? And the hollow rod is what you see on the outside. It sticks out an inch, I think you told me. As it goes inside the case, does it stay constant diameter and all of a sudden a portion of it is a shoulder bushing and a magnet? Is the magnet completely collinear with the hollow rod? Is there a change in color as you go from hollow rod into magnet? How do you know that one section is a magnet and one section is a rod? And can you slip it out of the case? Now back to you, Paul.
Oh, yeah, I had it apart. My hand. That's how I know. Let me go take it apart, Dick. By the way, this hollow tube shaft, no, it doesn't stick out. It's flush. It's flush with the case, so whatever pushes up against this comes from the transmission. It's flush.
Okay, if it's flush with the case, and you look from the outside into the hollow shaft, is there some kind of a keyway, a square hole? What is there that would allow you to turn that shaft, the hollow shaft, without slipping? If I look down the hollow hole of the shaft, is there anything there that would act like a keyway?
No, and I never found out about that. And I guess for the price I got charged, I probably should go back and ask, but... I shouldn't say that. The guy's very good. I think I would have got killed over at Honda. But this shaft is flush, and it looks like it would be a press fit to me with something pushing up. There's no keyway, no gear, no nothing. It kind of bothered me. I thought about that afterwards too, but something's making this thing spin. So some rod is pushing from the transmission to make this thing turn.
Okay, you're assuming it turns. How do you know it doesn't push up and down? The spring that's on the inside against the cover, how far would it let it to move and still be using the spring action? And by the way, when you're on the outside, before you open the case, if you pushed on the center of the hollow shaft with an ice pick, so to speak, would it move in an axial manner, or could you only rotate it? Could you move it axially? How far would the spring let it move?
Oh, yeah, it could move quite a bit. And I'd say quarter to three-eighths. Again, I'll go get it. I'll go look. That was my first question. He has a piece sitting there on a bench, and I picked it up. He told me that was it, and I started pushing on it. I said, does this go up and down? And he goes, no, it's a spinning thing. It spins. Maybe it does both. What do I know? Back to you.
Okay, he said it spins. If the hollow rod is a quarter inch or eighth of an inch diameter, the piece of tubing, is flush with the case, from the outside, how did you push it up and down?
You can push it with your fingers, you know. Again, I'll go get a look. I'll take a pencil and see how far we'll go in and out. While you're thinking that this does both stick or just a what?
Okay. When you have a magnetic coil, not a magnetic coil, an air coil with a magnetic core to it. When you've got a coil mounted on one side of this magnet, if the magnet is magnetized end to end, I could move the magnet up and down in the axial manner, in the collinear manner, I would develop a voltage on this coil. If the magnet is magnetized in a radial manner, from 12 o'clock toward 6 o'clock, I could rotate it, and I would get a voltage developed by the coil. And by the way, the voltage developed by the coil would be an AC voltage. If I rotated it, if it was a radial magnetization from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock, and I rotated it 50 revolutions per second, I would get a 50 hertz sine wave out of the coil. And so I'm of the opinion that it is an AC voltage that the electronics on the other end is looking for. And it's looking at the zero crossings of the AC voltage and determining RPM from that. That's my guess. I'm convinced that an AC voltage comes out of this thing and that the electronics of his car senses that AC voltage. I'm guessing that senses the zero crossings of the AC voltage. Either the negative crossings or the positive crossings, or both, divides by two, and figures out RPM. And that's how many of these magnetic sensors work. Wonder if you've ever heard anything like this one, Mel? Is this a new one it's a fairly new one to me. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. Well, I can only equate it with, like I say, caps their motors that we use in the recording equipment and our time-lapse videotape system. The capstair motor that they had in there, first of all, you know, what was amazing is that when you unmounted it from the chassis, the only thing that held it together was this flat magnet that was about an inch and a half in diameter, glued to a plate. On the other side of this plate was the, well, I shouldn't say on the other side of the plate. One side of the plate, had a shaft went right through the case, and that was actually a shaft that met up with the pressure roller. Now, the magnet was holding the whole works with a spring. So, in other words, it was self-adjust. That's what the spring did. There was nothing holding this thing together except magnetic pull to the case. And the spring was just there, basically, so the shaft could ride up and down like this to keep itself aligned. Then the coils was a whole bunch of coils that were mounted flat on the printed circuit board, and they went to basically, it looked like up amplifiers. You know, they had an IC. I guess it was basically converting an analog movement to a digital series of pulses. But the magnet, like I say, it didn't have any polarity to this magnet. That's the point. There's no polarity to the magnet, actually. If you took one of these magnets, you took one of these things, you scraped the magnet off, which is epoxy to the plate. The plate was made of a piece of aluminum. You scraped off this magnet, you had one that looked like a flat bagel, basically. It's like you sliced the bagel thin. And that's what it was. If you dropped it, it shattered, Dick, over.
CB2HWW. Is this any better, Dick?
Hey, Dick, that's the spring and a one pole. That sounds like mine.
CB2HWW.
Yeah, go ahead, Howie. Yeah, repeat your message now.
Feel like that. And number one, Dick, the reason why you can't tell the difference between the magnets is it's so close, you need a sensor or some kind of a magnet that's going to be able to see the north and south poles because they're just too close. So, you know, you have to have some kind of a sensor that has high directional activity. That's the first thing.
That sounds like a pretty good guess as to what it is. I don't think you need a negative and positive amplifier. Just an amplifier running analog that can act like an operational amplifier, so it can give you a positive and negative voltage would do, or only the positive half of the sine wave coming through as positive pulses would do, and the computer could be counting those pulses and know revolutions per second and therefore revolutions per minute. But whenever a magnetic field is going through a coil of wire, and if by any means you change the magnitude of the magnetic field by either moving the magnet, in your case, up and down, or moving the magnet by rotating it, in either case, the total number of lines of flux of magnetic field that cut the turns of wire, if those number of flux lines increases, you'll get a positive voltage, decreases, you'll get a negative voltage, during the change, not during the steady state, only during the change. That's the funny thing about a coil of wire near a magnet. Only during the change in magnetic field do you develop a voltage. That's called Lenz's law. Believe it or not, that's how a transformer works. The primary is creating a magnetic field. The change in the magnetic field is what the secondary picks up. You put DC voltage to a primary of a transformer, DC current or DC voltage, and after it settles down, nothing will appear on the secondary. It's only the change, the rate of change of magnetic field, is what couples energy into the secondary winding of a transformer. I think, Mel, you were describing what is sometimes called a printed circuit motor, but I'm not positive. Or your capstan could have been an RPM indicator, a velocity indicator, where as it rotated in the presence of a magnetic field, it created voltages that were sent by a computer somewhere to say that your tape should be speeded up or slowed down to get it at the exact right speed. You called it a capstan motor. Could it have been a capstan tape velocity indicator, which I would call a tachometer, or do you believe it was the primary mover of the tape? Now back to you, Mel.
I'm going to stick before I got to go.
It was not the take-up motor. The machines of that, of course, antiquated machines now, that we used, they were time-lapse machines, and they used a, at that time, well, they started out, but, you know, in the beginning, it just enhanced on, eventually they wound up using VHF cartridges, of course, but go back to the earlier days of them, they used a large cartridge, and they amount of pull that was required in the large cartridge was considerable. So they had a take-up motor, a rewind motor, a capstan motor that had a shaft that the pinch roller that, you know, was pulled up against the clamped it between the tape as it rolled through and the shaft. that kept it, you know, constant. Chopper kept the tape moving constant. And of course you had the head assembly with a separate motor on the head, but that rotated the head. But this motor, it's like I say, the what made it turn actually, I assume that most likely was a series of pulses that came back. It was a very complicated circuit. Printed circuit board and a lot of terminals coming out, and the IC that was on it was all, you know, a block. It wasn't something that you would sit down and service it. That's the way it was sold. If anything happened to this capstan assembly, you just unplugged it, unmounted it, and put another one in, because the way it was put together, there was no way for you to, you know, get to the printed circuit board to say, oh, I wanted to change the integrated circuits on it. First of all, they didn't have many, you know, parts list. This was part of the assembly. So what it did, this motor, yes, it rotated, and it definitely had feedback and everything, the constant speed stick. There was a series, quite a number of coils on that printed circuit coils, actually. So you guess you could call it a printed circuit motor with enough electronics on it to keep it constant. The plug assembly on the edge of the board contained at least a dozen connections on that plug. At least, yeah, say 10, 11, 12 connections on that edge pin plug, Dick, over.
Hence forward and reverse, you'd have to have the equivalent of what they do with a shaft encoder. In other words, you have a half-step indicator, so to speak, and depending on the phasing of the half-step versus the major step, you can figure out clockwise versus counterclockwise. These motors that are being used by the radio control electric-powered model airplane enthusiasts are really a marvel of engineering. They typically have a ring of magnets. Picture a ring that's, let's say, 2 inches in diameter, and around that ring,